When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome back to the OHIO podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Buckeye Boggs. That man over there is the wild man, Chris Wilds. And we are going to go ahead and start our 2024 Washington Huskies preview, Chris. Now, Washington is one of the four former Pac-12 teams that is joining the Big Ten in 2024. Of course, Washington last year played for a national championship, Chris.
They did.
And they had a former Big Ten Indiana quarterback leading their way.
Michael Penix Jr.
Michael Penix Jr., thank you. And was my Heisman selection at the beginning of the season, and he was my Heisman selection at the end of the season. Fell a little short, and then he fell a little short in the national championship game against that team up north. However, Washington had a tremendously successful season. Then DeBoer leaves the program, heads down to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and they are turning the page and basically rebuilding their program in one season with Jed Fisher.
Yes.
But that being, or Jed Fish, sorry, not Fisher, Jed Fish. Mm-hmm. That being said, let's take a quick snapshot look at the Washington Huskies season last year and historically before we dive into our interviews and take a look at Washington moving forward in 2024. Mm-hmm. Last year, Chris, they went 12-0 in the regular season. They had non-conference wins over Boise State, Tulsa, and Michigan State. They ran through the Pac-12 pretty seamlessly, other than two really close football games against Oregon in a 36-33 win that you and I watched on our way back from West Lafayette, Indiana.
Yes.
And then they also had a 22-20 a game against Oregon State. Excuse me. And a thrilling game there. They also had a 24-21 Apple Cup victory over Washington State before a 34-31 win over Oregon again in the Pac-12 championship. They defeated Texas in their bowl game 37-31 before suffering their first and only loss on the season in the national championship game against the team from that whore known as Ann Arbor in a 13-34 beatdown. So last year they were 14-1 overall. They went 9-0 in the Pac-12, 10-0 if you include the championship game. They welcome in Jed Fish as head coach, former coach of Arizona. Of course, this will be his first season at Washington, so he does not have a record yet for the Huskies, who play their home games at Husky Stadium in Seattle, Washington, where there's a capacity of 70,138 fans in what is one of the, if not the loudest stadium in all of college football. Their all-time record is 775 wins to 466 losses and 50 ties. They have an impressive bowl record, Chris, of 21 wins, 21 losses, and one tie, and they have won 18 conference championships in their existence. This is a proud franchise that, although does not have the mystique nor the history of a blue blood like USC, is just one step down from that. So this is a team that would put you in mind, in my opinion, of a Michigan State. Maybe a little better than Michigan State.
Yeah.
This is a good team to bring into the Big Ten, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's a great program to bring into the Big Ten. You know, they've maybe not always, but historically they go through spurts of being a very, very competitive team. You know, you look at what they did last year, and Eric, I tell you, I think that last year, call it what you will, and a lot of people will say it's cheating. A lot of people will say it's this, that, or the other. They ran into a buzzsaw in the form of Michigan last year. Michael Penix Jr. last year, I absolutely thought was, like you, I thought he was my Heisman guy. You know, he is a tremendous talent, and you know, of course, he's moved on to Atlanta. But you know, this is a program I think is a very solid fit for the Big Ten. And you know, I think a lot of people with DeBoer leaving for Alabama have kind of written this team off. And though I don't think you're going to see the success you had last year out of Washington, don't sleep on them. They're still a quality team with a quality roster.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So we're going to go ahead and move over to our interview. We met with the Sound of Siren podcast and Mr. Hooligan, as he likes to be called on the internet, Hooligan from Sound of Siren podcast, to get more of an in-depth look at Washington from someone who covers their team specifically all season long. Hang tight. And welcome back to the OHIO podcast, everybody. And I am now joined by Hooligan. He goes by Hooligan on social media. He is the host of Sound the Siren podcast, our Washington. I've been calling you Washington, but I've been corrected multiple times that I'm too redneck and I need to stop doing that. So I won't do that for this segment of the show. The Washington, our sister podcast there at the college huddle. Hooligan, welcome. So awesome to have you tonight.
Thanks. Thanks very much for having me. It's certainly happy to be here. And even Lee Corso is not allowed to call us Washington. So don't take offense at that one. even coach just like, can you not?
So let's start here. I got a list of questions. You know what's coming your way. But for the Ohio State fans who don't remember the 90s when we played each other quite a bit and only have the most recent bowl game and then watching you guys play for a national championship last year. Kind of do a quick overview of Washington as a program historically, and also what other Big Ten team, not Ohio State, would you think as a Washington fan would relate the most to your program so that we know how to hate you?
that's a couple of interesting needles to thread there.
I
think the and to harken back to a conversation I had with Daniel from the Gator Truth podcast, I think Washington, to put Washington in context, you know, going back to like the Pac-10 era, for the first 25 years of the Pac-10 era, the most frequent conference champion was USC, or the most frequent, you know, either conference champion or second place finisher was USC. Second to USC was Washington. It's a program that outside of the 2009, 2000, or kind of depending on when you timestamp it, because we went to the Rose Bowl following the 2001 season and then didn't make another, NY6, you know, big time bowl game until the college football playoff experience in 2016. So the early 2000s or the aughts essentially were essentially kind of our decade in the wilderness. We fell off a map, made some bad hires. The administration wasn't necessarily serious or didn't have a grasp on how important football is to drive the engine, not only of itself, but of the athletic department as a whole at the University of Washington. And also, you know, not continuing to be a profitable. UW is regularly, and when not paying off the stadium funding that we are now, is one of the, you know, 20 programs in the country that is consistently profitable. And football is a huge part of that engine. It had been to UW had been to a Rose Bowl basically in every decade. You know, again, it's where you timestamp it. It was after the, you know, if you consider the 2000, you know, year 2000, the end of the 90s, then we missed it in the aughts. If you consider it, you know, 2000 to 2009 as that decade, we got there and we were played in. So that's the kind of historic success that Washington has. It's the school that's, I think we were tied for fourth in terms of all time Rose Bowl appearances, of course, trailing, you know, the usual suspects of USC, Michigan, Ohio State. And I believe we're tied with Stanford. So that's the kind of program that Washington is, very consistently excellent with that kind of decade in the wilderness. To liken UW to another Big Ten program, it's really hard. You know, in terms of the traditional Big Ten programs, you have, you know, obviously Michigan and Ohio State are both blue bloods, bluest of blue bloods. No questions asked. Penn State is up there as well. And Nebraska is up there as well. Albeit, you know, Nebraska has had higher level success than Washington. They haven't smelled anything close to that level in goodness knows how long. Whereas Washington has had that, you know, recent run where we kind of got back to where we had ultimately kind of expected the program to be. As you know, Washington is never and was never a program that had year in and year out always been in the, you know, national championship level conversation. You know, going back to the Don James era of the 80s and 90s, it was, we'd have those through two or three year stretches of, like, we went to three consecutive Rose Bowls in the early 90s, and that was the era that I kind of first became a real diehard Washington fan. But then, you know, it was a little bit more of, you know, you'd pop up, you know, every year or two, you know, have the but consistent winning. We went over two decades, almost three decades, without having a losing season at all until that period in the aughts. So I said it in a conversation with Zach on the Big Ten Football Talk show. Washington, I'd say, is, you know, to use in recruiting, you know, you choose a recruiting metaphor. We're not a blue chip, but we're not really a red chip either. We're kind of somewhere in the middle of that kind of that next tier down that pops up. And, you know, I would say, so it really is to liken it, you know, and then to know how to hate us, like, certainly we'll probably bring some of the, a similar level of academic elitism and smack talk that team up north does.
I wondered if you were going to bring that up.
there's an element and there's a parallel. I'm not saying, you know, or to some extent, in some ways I could say that we're a little bit maybe Michigan light. not quite as, obviously we don't have, you know, Michigan's history of the number of national championships, although I wish we were one closer. And I wish that, you know, obviously wish that football game had played out
we
a little different.
We do too, actually. We wish you were one closer too.
I really, like, I'm not saying Washington would have won that football game, but I would have been really interested to see what that football game would have looked like if Dylan Johnson doesn't get hurt on our first offensive play of that game.
Sounds
or if we decided
similar,
not.
Eerie similar to Ohio State national championship loss to Florida when Ted Ginn Jr. went out on the very first offensive.
Yeah,
and when he scored a touchdown.
There's that, or the our previous staff's decision to start a senior that had missed most of the season, and took a couple of very bad angles on both of Donovan Edwards' long touchdown runs, as opposed to the players that had been being very productive and stable for the entirety of the season. So, I'm not, like I said, I'm not saying that we would have won that game. Our offense was not anything resembling what it had been when firing on all cylinders. Some of that is certainly attributable to what Michigan did defensively. But, you know, I would say that we're certainly kind of in that, you know, after Michigan and Ohio State, you know, and then with the new Big Ten, of course, USC has a bigger history than Washington does. So that's not, we're not USC either. But anybody that's expecting or thinking that Washington is Michigan State, Maryland, Rutgers, or even like what Nebraska has been in the Big Ten, it's going to be sorely disappointed.
So what are the main storylines for you guys heading into the season? Obviously going into the Big Ten, there's that, and everybody knows that. But, you know, new head coach, old head coach now down in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. A lot of people probably didn't follow Arizona football. A lot of new guys in. A lot of old guys out. Like, there's a lot of storylines going in there. What are the main ones?
Yeah, certainly that's a big part of the storyline. There's just a bunch of turnover at the university in general. We've changed athletic directors now twice within the last calendar year, with Jen Cohen going to USC, Troy Dannon briefly coming to Washington, and then leaving for Nebraska. From kind of all reports, or most reports that I've heard, pretty significant culture clash in that respect. But then speaking and to certainly give credit to Ohio State, Washington's new athletic director is Pat Chun, who'd been the athletic director at Washington State, was, I think, in pretty serious consideration for the Ohio State job before it went to Ross Bjork.
Obviously,
he's an Ohio guy, so definitely gets the conference. And so it's certainly leadership for the athletic department that understands what the Big Ten is all about, and understands like the evolving landscape of college football in terms of the football program. New coach, new philosophies, new approaches, a much more active and competitive approach to high school recruiting than was exhibited by the previous staff. And that's something that's been really encouraging for Husky fans. That, like, I haven't checked it in the last couple of days, but I think our current recruiting class is up to like 17th or so in the country. I tend not to give, you know, the first or kind of that transition class that they signed this past year is not necessarily like, yeah, of course you want it to be as good as possible. But I really start evaluating coaches' performance on their first, you know, they've been in the role. It's the class that they sign, you know, basically a full year into the job. And it's off to a very promising start. If this class maintains that position, that's as basically as close to as good a class as we signed at the tail end of the Chris Peterson era, which had been a fairly high watermark since like one class that was signed by Steve Sarkisian, and kind of hadn't been reached since Rick Neuheisel was our coach that took us to that Rose Bowl in the early 2000s. And then he started to make some interesting decisions in recruiting and in wagering in other aspects. But, you know, one class he signed like, I think, 7 wide receivers. So there was not a whole lot of structural balance in the classes that Neuheisel signed. But so that's been really encouraging. And if you, with a staff that I think has proven that they're not good at just recruiting, but also development, Jed Fish owns one of the only 10, one of three 10 win seasons at the University of Arizona ever. That's a place that doesn't win very often, doesn't win very consistently, very rarely wins 10 games. And he did it, brought in Steve Belichick as the defensive coordinator, you know, son of the great Bill Belichick, which is kind of one of the big storylines, you know, in kind of a hot take, is I think the defense is going to take a pretty significant step forward. And while obviously offense carried the day and carried Washington to the national championship game these past two seasons, I think I'm not saying that the offense is going to take a significant step back, because Fish is an offensive coach and he's been productive. He's led productive offenses, top 10 passing offenses, basically everywhere he's been. But with the returning talent, plus the supplemental talent that was brought in from the portal, including Ephesians Prysock, who followed him up from Arizona, the defense is going to hold its own in the Big Ten. I'll just put it that way.
Let's follow up question with that, because that's an interesting take. So I've been running this theory by West Coast people, Pac-12 people, and as we've been sound the siren. There it is. There's your Husky.
It's not. It's. I don't actually have a Husky. I have two pit mixes, but they wear purple on fall Saturdays and occasionally will chime in and aren't particularly quiet, kind of like me.
Love it. So here's my theory, and my theory is this: that the Big Ten is the physicality of the Big Ten, especially on the Big Ten defenses. At first, as the season gets underway, the West Coast teams are going to, I think, do well. And then as the season wears on, the physicality of playing Big Ten teams and coupled with travel is going to wear on the teams. And so if you are a Big Ten team, you want to catch the West Coast teams at the end of the season, because they're going to be worn out and they're going to be beat down from the physicality and the travel. What do you think of my theory?
I think you hit on a key factor. I think the travel is definitely going to play. And I think if you had, I think I've said it a couple of times on a couple of different shows that I've been on, where if I had to pick, I mean, I don't expect Washington to win 11 or 12 games. Things would have to break extraordinarily right for that to happen again this season. But if I had to pick one game right now where I am the least confident that Washington is going to win the game, It's when we travel to Penn State in mid-November. Yes, I understand. And I also understand that we have a rematch with Oregon that at the end of the season, and Oregon returns quite a bit, although they lose quite a bit as well. And they've certainly had a very, very good off season, both in the portal and in high school recruiting. But I think that that's certainly something that's going to be very interesting. I do think to some extent that the branding of West Coast teams as soft is, I'm not sure about that. And yes, it's a different brand of football, but because I think the one thing that West Coast teams bring that a lot of the Big Ten teams, not named Ohio State and not named Michigan, don't also bring the same level of speed. And it's that matter of styles. But when we needed to, against probably what was the best defense that we saw until we played Michigan, we had no problems running the ball in key situations against Oregon. I'll use Iowa as an example. Incredibly strong defense. That team was not going to if Washington had played Iowa last season.
Let's just talk about Iowa for a second, because a lot of people like to bring that up, right? Ohio State hung over 40 points on them last year. You know what I mean? Like, it's a great defense when they're going up against a team from the Big Ten West, what was the Big Ten West, who plays a style of ball that matches what they play. We're going to beat you in a phone booth, right? Like, well, with given the strength of that defense. But then every time they would go up against a team that has a strong defense but also an electric offense, they would fall flat on their face every single time.
And not to be disrespectful, but last year's Ohio State offense was not to the standard of previous seasons by any stretch of the imagination.
Offensive line was as leaky as grandma's faucet, and the quarterback had no legs and couldn't escape the pocket. And yeah, it was very one dimensional, man. Yeah. If not for our defense at times, it would have been.
Yeah. So that's the thing is, and I think what's going to be really interesting about this team and this season is that adjustment in style. And styles in a lot of ways make fights. And one of the things that I think particularly that Steve Belichick as our defensive coordinator is going to bring to the table, the Patriots have thrived the last few years as being very, very multiple, not very exactly set in their ways where we're going to run out the same formations and the same guys over and over and over again. That's not going to be what you're going to see from the Washington defense this year. You're going to see it, it will look significantly different against teams like USC and Oregon, who are going to want to spread it out, run vertical routes, get athletes in space. You're going to see much different packages in those games as you're going to see against an Iowa or a Penn State, where until proven otherwise, I guarantee you, until proven otherwise, we're going to make whoever is Iowa's quarterback throw the football. We're going to make Drew Aller throw the football. And if Drew Aller beats us with that receiving core, more power to him. But I mean, and Penn State certainly is good enough. So it's there is still, well, you know, to go back to the question about storylines. So obviously you have coaching turnover, but continuing on the vein of, we brought in another offensive coach, so the offense is still going to be a focal point and a strength of the team. The big question mark is the offensive line. We lost everybody, three to the transfer portal, all of whom ended up in the SEC, two to the NFL draft, both I believe were second round selections off that Moore Award winning offensive line from last year. That's the most outstanding question. If that offensive line is average to above average, Washington is going to be just fine because there is talent at the skill positions. We don't have talent at receiver the way we did last year, but it's not a significant, but it is not as big a step back as some might think. I saw a hot take thing on Twitter today on what's the hot couple of hot take questions. And I said that one of our receivers who barely played last year is going to be first team all conference because he's been lighting up the defense for the last two springs. And he just couldn't get past in terms of getting playing time or reps against you know, past Rome Odunze, Jalen McMillan, and Jalen Polk. But Denzel Boston is going to be a dude. And on the other side of the field, we have a guy that racked up over 2,000 yards of receiving yards in his career at Cal, not exactly a vaunted offensive power, in Jeremiah Hunter. So the skill position talent is there. Will Rogers, who's going to be replacing Michael Penix at quarterback. No one expects him to be Michael Penix at quarterback. Michael Penix was a generational quarterback at the University of Washington, maybe a generational quarterback, in terms of what he did for, you know, in the Pac-10, Pac-12. But Will Rogers is second all time in the SEC in passing yards and fourth in touchdown passes. We're not, the Huskies aren't turning to me under center. but again, it's a new offensive line. And so a lot, and I think we have a relatively soft landing into the season. We start with Weber State for God knows what reason, an 8 o'clock kickoff at Husky Stadium on August 31st. And then we leave Eastern Michigan, Washington State before Northwestern comes to town the fourth week of the season. And then things start to ramp up from there. But to your point, kind of the biggest early season test other than Michigan coming to Husky Stadium is a trip the following week to Iowa City. And that back-to-back is going to be interesting. USC also comes to Seattle. UCLA comes to Seattle. So there's parts of the schedule that set up really well.
Before we dive into the schedule and we talk over-unders and ceilings and floors, let's talk a little bit more about the roster, a little bit more of who to look out for. You've given me a couple names, Denzel Boston, mm-hmm. Jeremiah Hunter, Will Roger, obviously. And you've talked about some of the key losses. Are there some other, maybe on the defensive side, since that was more offensive, maybe some defensive names that you can mention to us? And then follow that up there with what do you believe the strength and weakness of this year's Husky team will be?
Yeah, I will give one other name on, or maybe two other names on offense, because sure. Our projected starter over Dylan Johnson last year was lost to injury before the season, and he's going to be back. Essentially, a pretty good 1-2 punch in Cam Davis, who's coming back from an injury, and one of the key transfers, if not the key transfer that followed Fish from Arizona, is Jonah Coleman. The guy's built like a fire hydrant, but he's fast. He's about 5 cent. He's probably like 5'7", 5'8", about 220, 230 with Jets. And he's going to be right in the mix for first and second team all-conference honors if the line does what it can do for him. On the defensive side of the ball, you're going to hear the name Carson Bruner a lot. as we get into the Big Ten schedule, Big Ten fans, you're going to, you know, as we travel to Iowa City and Penn State, you're going to hear that was Carson Bruner on the tackle a lot. Son of Husky legend Mark Bruner, who was a part of our national championship team in 1991, and then, you know, played a number of years with the Pittsburgh Steelers in the NFL. A big key transfer for us was Ephesians Prysock on the defensive side of the ball, came up from Arizona, a very long corner at about 6'3". We return Elijah Jackson, who made the key play at the end of the Sugar Bowl to bat the pass away to seal that win. Up front, it's going to be very, very multiple. I don't necessarily think that we have the, you know, game breaker in the interior of the defensive line. We did have a player at the edge position, Zach Durfee, that was unfortunately impacted by NCAA transfer nonsense and didn't get to play last season when he very well should have, and he's fully eligible this year. He dealt with a little bit of an elbow injury at the end of the spring. But I expect he will be wreaking some havoc in addition to some other, you know, both returning players and other transfers in from Arizona. And there's going to be a pretty deep secondary, and the competition in the secondary has been pretty intense. And I think that's only going to breed really good play over the course of the year. That includes Jordan Straw, who initially went to Indiana, transferred to Arizona, and then followed Fish to Washington. Leroy Bryan at corner. Returners at safety and Mick Hellestein, Cameron Fabiculon. And it's going to be a pretty deep and solid unit. And I think the only teams that really, truly scare me, the biggest question again there is going to be in the trenches, where we had some key transfer in Sebastian Valdez from Montana State, you know, as an interior defensive lineman. But again, it's going to be very, very situational. So it's going to be really interesting in the first part of the season to see what Steve Belichick does and how that scheme manifests. I don't think we're going to really, really know what the defense is going to look like or kind of how successful it's going to be until we get into honestly, probably the Rutgers, you know, the first road game in the Big Ten traveling out to Piscataway to play a good Rutgers team.
They're very good, actually. That's kind of my – every year I like to throw kind of off-the-wall thing. I think Rutgers could make a college football playoff.
It's absolutely possible with the schedule that they
– They have the easiest schedule in the Big Ten. They do. They avoid Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, Oregon, and Iowa. They avoid all of them. And it's like, what?
Their big tests are Washington and USC.
And then Virginia Tech. I think because people
– Well, yeah.
Virginia Tech people are saying to win the ACC, and I'm like, but I mean,
they're getting better, and Rutgers does have to go to Lane Stadium, and that's no picnic.
I think that's going to be a really big measuring stick game for Rutgers. Mm-hmm. So I hear you saying that the skill positions are very strong still. No worries there. Your concern is in the trenches. Okay. Gotcha.
Not an ideal time to be transitioning into the Big Ten from that standpoint, and certainly the outlook for 2024 would be considerably different if not for the coaching change. While Fish brings a lot of things, I certainly think if DeBoer had not left for Alabama, at least two of the three that will be playing in the SEC next year, I am fairly confident would still be Huskies, particularly Parker Brill. You know, if DeBoer and Huff had retained Scott Huff as his offensive line coach, Parker Brailsford would still be a Washington Husky, and that's one of the best centers in the country. So it's definitely a question mark, and we're not going to know until we see it in action. There were some key transfers. We have two transfers in at tackle. One that was a former, I believe, junior college, either All-American or All-Conference player, and Maximus McCree. Drew Asaparty, you know, came up to play right tackle from San Diego State and had a couple of good seasons down there. There is some talent and some young talent in this, and this staff, and Brennan Carroll, offensive coordinator and offensive line coach, has shown in his time at Arizona that he will play guys on the offensive line early and have success with them. He made Jordan Morgan a first round pick in the NFL draft, kind of from being an under the radar player. And there's certainly some size coming in addition to some size already on the roster, but it's young and they didn't get a lot of reps either last year with what we had in front of them.
Gotcha. All right. I've got your schedule pulled up real fast here. So looking at it, you know, you kind of went through it already, and I feel like those first four games are definitely should be dubs for the team with the W on the side of their helmet. Then you go to Rutgers and then Michigan and then
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Go to Iowa. Those are three difficult games before you get your first bye. Then you get the second bye in a row against Indiana, and then you get.
Sorry. You're not worried about a house of horrors in Bloomington for the Huskies.
Listen. We are about to find out if the Group of Five All-Star team can compete on. In a G4 conference and Power Four. So can a G5 All-Star team compete against the Power Four? That's the way they are labeling themselves in Indiana, is they are basically become a G5 All-Star team because they got everybody from JMU to go to their school. It's not going to happen.
Worked so well for Liberty against Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl.
It worked fantastically well for them, didn't it? So I wouldn't worry if I were you guys on that one. USC. Again, you help me out. I haven't talked to the USC guys yet. I still see a team that is going to have to try to find an identity defensively.
They made an out. I think USC made a very good hire, and there is some talent there.
Yes.
But it's a question that until I see it, I'm going to reserve judgment.
Well, will Lane and allow them to play defense? You know, like, let's be honest here. Like, a lot of this has
to Lincoln Riley.
Lincoln Riley. What did I say? Lane Kiffin? One in the same, one could argue.
I think Lane probably is a little better at cooking brisket. That's not necessarily been that's a documented weakness for Lincoln. And for that matter, I mean, certainly Lincoln, you know, he always has really good offenses, but there's a bigger question mark than in over 5 years for a Lincoln Riley coach team at the quarterback position. Miller Moss had a great bowl game. Great bowl games don't make all conference quarterback play.
Correct. Correct. That's a very good point. Then the trip to Penn State, like you mentioned, you get UCLA before another bye and then Oregon. So looking at that schedule, it's not a murderer's row, but it's also not easy, to be completely honest with you.
Yep.
What's the floor? What's the ceiling from a Husky fan?
I mean, with the caveat again of offensive line play, if our offensive line play is abysmal, the floor could be, you know, we could be looking at, you know, a five or, you know, lucky to if or is abysmal or under or below par and not in a good way. You could be looking at Washington winning those first four game, you know, three or four games, picking up a win against Indiana, maybe get, you know, the path there is probably to a 6-win season is probably winning the first four, beating Indiana, beating UCLA at home. And that's your six. That said, if we get average or better offensive line play until proven otherwise, I think, you know, I've got to not shout out EA Sports here from their omission of Husky Stadium as one of the toughest venues to play in college football. This is a program that's won 14 consecutive games at home. Still owns the all-time noise record for a decibel reading during a college football game. That was set against Nebraska in 1992, and it approached that this past fall on a particular October Saturday against a team down in Eugene where it was registered something north of 131 decibels. This is not an easy place to play by any stretch of the imagination. And so, you know, I could see 8-4. I could even see, you know, a 9-3 in there, you know, depending on the upside of the play in the trenches, because Michigan still has the defense. There's a lot of questions that they didn't have last year on offense.
There's no depth there, brother. They are just a couple injuries away from being very mediocre, especially right on the defensive line.
And if Miller Moss can get the ball to Zachariah Branch reliably, USC is going to cause us some problems. But again, that's an outstanding question for USC is how good their, you know, not only how good their defense is going to be, but how good is their offense without all world talent at the quarterback position. That has to be seen. If we get good offensive line play, that's going to negate a lot of the concern that I would have about the trip to Iowa City. Because I don't pretend, no matter how good they're, you know, unless their offensive coordinator just suddenly becomes Ryan Grubb, a clone or a disciple of Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer, they're going to struggle against our defense. Just because there's athletes on our defense. Penn State is a likely loss based on travel, based on the wear and tear of the season that you were pointing out. But
yeah, I know. I agree.
The most talented team that we're going to play is the last team we're going to play. And, you know, yeah, Rutgers is a team like Rutgers is a, you know, in terms of my prediction for this season, I think it's probably going to be somewhere it's anywhere in that 7-5 to 9-3 range. The Rutgers game is going to tell me a lot. If we come out of Rutgers with a win and we're 5-0, it's going to get interesting in a hurry.
I kid you not. I think your trip to Piscataway is going to be more difficult for you guys than going to Happy Valley.
It could be.
I really believe that. All right. So, something fun for you here. All right. So I've been coming up with new rivalries for our new friends in the Big Ten. All right. And I'm talking off the wall stuff because everybody wants to, you know, everybody's got like, hey, you'll this team and that team. And okay. So I came up with the Golden Spike Trophy for Purdue and UCLA. They both have gold colors and Purdue loves to go to talk about trains. And when they built the railroad track going west, they drove a golden spike halfway in. And okay. So they're both basketball programs. They have the golden spike, right? Ohio State and Oregon are going to participate in what I'm calling the Nike Bowl, where the losing coach has to hand his Nikes to the winning coach at midfield after the game. I would love to see Phil Knight present that one, by the way, and especially if we beat Oregon. Here is my Washington one for you. We have the two most northern schools now in the Big Ten are Washington and Minnesota. I think a Kings of the North or a King of the North rivalry between the two most northern schools would be something to get behind. What do you think?
We've got some history there. Minnesota has a national champion, or their most recent national championship is a season that concluded for them with a loss to Washington in the Rose Bowl. So that's going back before you and I's era. I think that was the 1960s.
Okay. There was
Minnesota was named the national championship prior to the bowl season. They were undefeated. Washington had had one narrow loss.
Weird time, man.
Washington had had, I believe, what was a narrow loss, I believe, either to Navy, and this was when the service academies were a thing in college football, or it was either Navy or I might have been USC. I don't remember my history. Again, that predates me by a couple of decades, so I wasn't there and can't speak to what happened, but I do know that that season finished with a Washington win over Minnesota in the Rose Bowl. So there is a little bit of history there. You can flip it, you know, flip RW upside down, and it looks a lot like their M. Certainly, I will also say in terms of rivalries, or at least kind of secondary rivalries, there is a lot of history, both recent and in the not too distant past, with the University of Michigan. Again, obviously, we just played them for the national championship, had a great home and home series in the early 2000s before Washington fell off a cliff. Played them in consecutive Rose Bowls, won one by Washington that capped off our perfect season in the 1991 national championship, and then the one the year later captured by Michigan. But there's a lot of history between Washington and Michigan, but Washington and Minnesota for the Kings in the North. And I'm sorry, we're going to win that one, not only on the football field, but the Starks was a dire wolf that looks kind of like that the Sound of Siren logo. Is anybody really going to follow a golden gopher into battle?
Well, here's the thing. Like, you got to have a cool rivalry trophy with this too.
Well,
no one has a crown. Wouldn't that be cool? A golden crown?
It would be. Well, and I will also say the other fun part about that one is that what's PJ Flex go-to phrase? Row the boat. Rowing the boat. Kind of something that Washington's pretty darn good at. Boys in the Boat, team that went to the 1936 Olympics in Berlin and beat the Nazis, was Washington's Varsity Eight. So
cool. So they were Olympic teammates with Ohio State's greatest legend of all time. You know, going and defying the Nazis.
Washington regularly wins. Washington's count of NCAA championships across all sports would be significantly higher than it is if men's crew was included, because we win that all the damn time.
There you go.
So unlike Gophers and unlike Minnesota, we actually do the row the boat pretty damn well out here.
I like it.
Row the boat literally to the stadium.
Yeah. And that's one of the coolest things is if I'm not mistaken, you can drive a boat to your stadium, and can't you? Like, it's one of the few that you can literally dock your boat and go to a game. Like, I think that's really cool.
And with apologies to Tennessee and Baylor that are on rivers, that river is not that far across. In this case, I'll kind of duck down a little bit. from the upper deck on sides of the stadium, you can actually beyond Lake Washington, which is behind the stadium on the east side, you can see the Cascade Range on a clear day. You can see the Cascade Mountains behind the stadium. And if you're in the right spot in the stadium, you can look one way and see the Cascade Mountains. You can look the other way and see the Olympic Mountains from Washington, from our stadium, from the dock where you can draw, where we, you know, you can sailgate at the University of Washington, take a boat to the game a couple of times. Chris Peterson and Jimmy Lake, former head coaches at Washington, were known to boat to work. It's literally like the softball stadium is behind these stands at the end under the scoreboard here. But then just the other side of the softball stadium is Lake Washington. From that dock, you can go out the Ballard Locks through the Montlake Cut and Lake Union and be in Puget Sound, which ultimately connects to the Pacific Ocean within about 40 minutes.
That's wildly cool, dude. That is cool. For someone being landlocked like we are here in Ohio, it's a dream, right?
We do it a little different out here.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's my cousin's Ryan Miller. He played on the 96 Ohio State team. He got to go out to Washington to play you guys. Yep. We did the home and home in the mid-90s. And so I've always had it on my bucket list to go see Washington. Now I really have a reason to, because we'll be out there eventually. And so it'll be like, that'll be a trip that's on my bucket list to take. And so, of course, I was going to go to Eugene, and then that one got sidelined by COVID. And then this year, I just didn't have that in my to-do list.
You're not missing anything.
Don't let them hear that.
anybody that for anything other than college football or track or something to do with athletic, anybody that goes out of their way to visit Eugene that has nothing to do with athletics is out of their mind.
Oh my goodness. The shots fired. I love it. Where can we might have some Washington fans watching this right now, Julian. And they've never listened to your podcast or followed you guys before. Where can they find you, my friend?
We're certainly at Sound the Siren. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, basically anywhere podcasts can be found. We're there. We're on YouTube. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Sound the Siren UW. Oh, by the way, Badgers, we are the real UW. That's another rivalry that we could talk about, is the battlery for who the real UW is, and that the real UW wears purple. They can find me on Twitter at hooligan7_STSUW. I'm also on Instagram at hooligan7_UW. But we're everywhere. We're trying to grow we're certainly trying to grow our brand. We've got a couple of new things that we're going to try during the course of this summer, including I'm working to schedule a couple conversations with former athletes, kind of covering their time at Washington, and a look back at the Pac-10 and Pac-12 era, as that has sadly reached its conclusion, called Motley Memories, that we're working on that. Always stuff going on. We're also certainly going to continue to try and expand to cover other things other than just football, as time allows and as life allows. But that's where we are.
Beautiful. Julian, thank you so much for being a part of this preview. Looking forward to watching some Washington Husky football in the Big Ten. So, still sounds so weird to say that. Big Ten After Dark just doesn't have the same.
To at least, you know, calm the minds, it won't, Big Ten After Dark won't involve any trips to Corvallis and Pullman where weird things, or Tucson for that matter, where weird things happen. We certainly had our fair share of it, even in our own house, a lightning game in 2019 that was delayed by a lightning storm for something on the order of 3 or 4 hours and didn't conclude until about 2 in the morning. Comes to mind, but
that's 5 a.m. for us Eastern Standard Time folks. So that's
I will say
Pac-12 in the morning is what that became.
I will say it's definitely one of the things that I do enjoy as a college football fan in general, and how, why I think that being a college football fan on the West Coast is pretty special. We get to wake up with college football. College football is, you know, here in the Pacific time zone, game day and Big Noon kickoff are on at 6 and 7 in the morning, and games kick off at 9 o'clock. I'm not going to complain about us having a couple of 9 a.m. kickoffs for road games. I don't necessarily think that I want to be at Husky Stadium for a 9 a.m. kickoff. That's a little early to be completely rabid, but I'll adjust, I guess.
Tailgating will be taking place after the game at noon, everybody.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
It's a little early to really get after it.
Right. Julian, thank you so much for being a part of this preview again, my friend. And I look forward to working with you, and so thankful to have you a part of the College Huddle with us. And we wish you all the best this season.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and look forward to talking with you again.
And we thank Julian and the Sound of Siren podcast for joining us on our Washington preview here on the OHIO podcast, Chris. All right, mm-hmm. Let's do a deep dive into their roster. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a look at the offense first for Washington. So they don't have a ton of turnover as far as the offensive side. They have four guys that they have brought in as transfers, and that typically seems to happen more often when you have a new head coach, especially if he's got guys who he recruited at his previous school who want to follow him to where he's at now. And so we see that a little bit here. And so, but there's a lot of guys who Washington has developed who decided to stay because it's their time to play. So this is a younger offensive roster. There's not a lot of senior leadership here. There are a few seniors, but it is a lot of underclassmen. Let's take a look at the quarterback position. Will Rogers, senior transfer. That should sound familiar to all of you. And then you've got Jonah Coleman, the junior transfer from Arizona. Jonah Coleman is a bona fide stud running back, in my opinion. He was one of the top five guys in our running back preview that we did. Jeremiah Hunter, redshirt senior. He came from Cal. So he's obviously a wide receiver who has a ton of experience and will look to lead this wide receiving group as well. But then look at the rest of the guys on this roster. You've got sophomore, senior, freshman, sophomore, junior, sophomore, senior. Chris, this is an offense that I think it's got potential, but I also think this is an offense, Chris, that is going to need some time, especially in a new scheme and a new offense under new coaching.
Yeah, I'll tell you, if I'm a Washington fan, the thing that concerns me most is you have one redshirt junior on that offensive line. Everyone else, redshirt sophomore, freshman, true freshman, true sophomore, redshirt sophomore. These guys, Eric, are, like you said, very inexperienced. And when you talk about playing against the caliber of defensive linemen you're going to see in the Big Ten, you know, it scares me a little bit for Washington that they're guys in the trenches. I just don't really have that experience yet. I think this is a team that by midseason might hit a stride a little bit. But in the early going, they could have a challenge in front of them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's take a quick look at the other side of the ball now, Chris. Let's go over to the defensive side of the football. Here, I think there's a little bit more turnover here. You've got five transfers in. That's almost half your defense. But this is a much more veteran-led side of the football of guys who decided to stick around for their fourth or fifth season in Washington, because now it's their opportunity to play. So although these are guys who've been with the program, a lot of them were backups, and so now they get their opportunity to shine. Looking at the roster overall, though, and a lot of those guys are seniors. You know, Jacob Banz, redshirt senior. Alfonso Tupatadala, and I probably butchered that, and I apologize, redshirt senior. Carson Bruner, senior. Cameron Fibakalanan, I don't know how to pronounce that, redshirt senior. You've got Mikel Easton, redshirt junior. Elijah Jackson, redshirt junior. And these were the guys who are sticking around, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have a bunch of transfers. And again, a lot of them, sophomore, senior, junior, sophomore. This is not outside the guys who are sticking around to are getting their first crack to play, Chris. Again, this is not a huge senior-led team, even on defense. It appears to be a little bit more on the inexperienced side.
Yeah, yeah. Coach Fish definitely has a very useful, or I'm sorry, not useful, youthful program.
Although they might become useful over time.
They could. I mean, you've got some guys on there who've got some talent, Eric, who I think, they're going to struggle this year at times. You mentioned a lot of names there, like Tupitala.
Oh, very good. That was much better than what I did.
Yeah. What you don't see is names on there like Tui Maluau,
Yeah, we know that one.
That just strike fear into your heart.
True.
So these are guys that I think, again, solid team, young team. I just think that Coach Fish is going to have to take his time, get him coached up. And again, this is a team that might surprise some people, but overall right now, just you're not going to see a team that had the success it did last year.
Exactly. And so
be patient, Washington.
Yes. Be patient. This first year, you might take some lumps, but I can see what he did in Arizona, and there's definitely a path for the same.
Yes.
One. All right, Chris, let's take a Washington schedule now, if you want. It's an interesting schedule, to say the least. It's not as hard as USC's or UCLA's, but there's still some difficulties in this schedule. So they start off against Weber State, Eastern Michigan. Those should be automatic W's. And then the Apple Cup, week 3 against Washington State. This is not an easy game. Washington State's going to be out for blood, Chris. Like, this is going to – they're going to be so motivated for this football game. But they do get them at home, which is a huge advantage for them. And then their first Big Ten game is at home against Northwestern. So we got a couple purple people eater games in that one. Can Washington go 4-0 to start the season?
I think they can, and I think they will, Eric. I think this is a, first of all, a great introduction to the Big Ten. Catching a Northwestern team that I do think, despite their success last year, is going to be down a little bit this year. You look at a team that's got, is this the first team traveling west, the first weekend where we have a team traveling west from the Big Ten? It might be.
Not sure about that.
I know, that's actually, maybe, I'm not sure. But anyhow, they do get them in the friendly confines there. And, you know, that Washington Stadium is just – that's a tough place to play for any team, yet alone a team that, like I said, I think this is going to be a Northwestern team that's down. Washington State, I think that obviously getting that game at home is huge. You're right. Washington State's going to be motivated. There may be some of this whole you killed our conference thing coming, but you know what? Be thankful, Washington State. You're going off to play in the Mountain West or something like that, where you should be somewhat dominant. I think this is a 4-0 team to start the season. But, man, they run into a buzzsaw the next 3 weeks after that.
They do. At Rutgers, so they got to go cross country. Then they come back home and take on that team up north. And then they go back on the road again at Iowa. That is
– we know how tough Kinnick is playing.
Yeah, that is not easy before they get their first bye. Then they're at Indiana, and then they're home against USC, and then they're on the road again at Penn State. So think about going from Seattle, Washington, to the Eastern time zone 3 times, in Iowa, almost the Eastern time zone there, so 2 time zones away for them. But, whew, that's not easy. And then they're home against UCLA before they get their last bye, and then – at Oregon to finish the season. The over-under from the booking is 7.5 is their over-under for this season. Chris, you and I both have them at 7-5, 4-5 in the Big Ten. JR actually has them at 5-7. My apologies. I got the wrong one there from JR. So, JR, I apologize. JR actually has them under 500, not going to a bowl game at 5-7. And he has them at 2-7 in the Big Ten with wins over Indiana and, I believe, UCLA.
You know, love JR to death, Eric, but sometimes he makes me scratch my head. This is a team that is less than a year removed from playing for the national championship. Yes,
there are very few guys that actually played.
But this is not a team that is a sub 500 team. I really don't believe that. They are still a solid program. I think they brought in a great coach. Again, we've said it earlier, this is not a team that's going to go, you know, 10-2 and be in the college football playoff. It's not. I mean, let's be realistic. This is a team that I think 7-5 is very reasonable. I think they start out with 3 wins. I think they suffer 3 losses in that buzzsaw game, our stretch we talked about with Rutgers, Michigan, and Iowa. I think they probably lose all 3 of those. But then I think they come back. I think they win 3 out of the last 5. They go 7-5. They're bowl eligible. And you know what? I really feel like, and some people may disagree with me on this, if you're bowl eligible in the Big Ten, in a conference that now fields Ohio State, last year's national champion and those cheaters up north, Oregon, you know, perennial Heisman maker in Lincoln Kennedy down there at USC, a school that's got a great tradition in its own right.
Or Lincoln Riley, him too.
That guy too.
Yeah.
Who did I say?
Lincoln Kennedy.
Yeah, well, Lincoln Kennedy and Lincoln Riley are two big different size guys.
I think John Kennedy would slap you across the face.
Lincoln Kennedy was an offensive tackle for the Falcons.
There you go.
But Lincoln Riley, offensive genius.
Yeah.
Perennial Heisman maker. Penn State.
They're a blue blood. Yes. USC's a blue blood.
Penn State. I mean, if you go out and you go 7-5 and you win a bowl in a conference that includes that lineup, guys, that's nothing to hang your heads about. It's really not. You know, and they're a team that I think will get back into that playoff contention in the near future. I just don't think it's this year. So I think the schedule makers were somewhat kind to them, except with the exception of that 3-game stretch. And, you know, this is a team. 7-5 is my prediction. I think they got an 8-win ceiling. And I think they've probably got a 5 or 6-win floor.
There you go. So that's Chris's prediction. I would stay away from this team. I'm not putting any money
Absolutely.
On them. I think at 7.5 feels a little high, but this is a team that if they get hot, given that talent, and if they can pick up the offense quick enough, maybe.
I've got them with 2 losses that I think they could potentially flip into wins, which would put them at 9 wins if they did for me.
What's that? Iowa
is one.
And Penn State?
Penn State's the other.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Interesting. So we both are very similar, Chris, with our view of the Huskies this year. This is a team that's building. This will be a team that I feel like this is like back in during Michigan State's heyday. That I think what you're going to see from Washington more times than not in the future is they can contend. They're not going to contend every single year, but they can contend. And if you're not careful, they'll beat you.
Yeah.
I think last year was kind of the ceiling for them. That's the best that they can be. They did win a national championship in 91. I mean, that was a long time ago, but they did win
one. Brock Huard, I think, was the quarterback out there at the time.
And they've knocked on that. They were knocking on the door last year. So we'll see. The fact that they were there and then the coach left, that to me is kind of telling. That tells me that's the best it can be is right there. They're not going to be an Ohio State. They're not going to be a USC. They're not going to be a team up north and have like runs where they can be dynasty level. They're not going to be that.
Yeah.
But they are that next notch, and they admit themselves that they're that next notch down. So we'll see how they're going to go this season. It's going to be very interesting to bring them in. That first game against Northwestern, I'm very intrigued by that. If they travel out to Rutgers and they can beat Rutgers in New Jersey, Washington's a 9-win team.
Man, I just don't see that happening.
I don't see it happening either, but just – Be very careful there.
But yeah,
for that.
Yeah.
Like, share, subscribe. We really do appreciate it. We hope you're enjoying these previews. This was Washington. This was our second team from out west. We've done UCLA. We've done Washington. Next up, it's the Trojans of USC. Later this week, we'll be dropping that for all of you. We're also going to be dropping our position previews, top 10 previews in the Big Ten by position. Wide receivers are up next. That'll be dropping tomorrow, so be on the lookout for that one as well. Remember, be kind to one another. I owe Sums OH. Seek Carbon High with all your heart. Till next time, Chris. OH.
Ohio.
Bucks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.